crackers, to the hackers and the crackers. I see in binary, I speak source code. Step on my toes, I'll post a million JPEGs of you in a fag pose. In your digital stance, getting firewalled ho. Cause I'm riding the net in my 6-4. I was a dick with my 56. Now with my cable, I'm able to get that stable. On the out, my name is Ace and I'm a Leo. On the digital highway, my name is Neo and I'm a hero. In a flash, I'll school you on burning Dreamcasts. You need some ISOs? Let me through my hard drive rifle. Our exchange you could never stifle. In a digital hug, you just caught the love bug. I bootlegged your CD. I caused the fight between Un and Jay-Z. Your CG, it's all gonna be free. Whether we take it by force or we take it nicely. You feel that rattle in your bones? When I tell you we just hacked Dow Jones. And NASDAQ leave you flat on your back. Cause I am he who loves to hack and crack. Cause I am he who loves to hack and crack. This is dedicated to the hackers and the crackers. Serial codes, source codes, ISOs, RANs, zip sits. Dedicated to the hackers and the crackers.
Alright, welcome everybody to the I've lost track of how many false starts we've had tonight, but this one's gonna stick. I am Stank Dog. This is Binary Revolution Radio, episode 60. We are coming to you on August 31st, Tuesday, 2004. My co-host today is not Theory.
Hi, everybody. I need to make the intro boring so we don't laugh.
So you're going to kill me again. You're going to make me crack up. I'm in tears laughing. This is like the umpteenth intake, outtake, start of the show because we have all these outtakes. But this time, we are going to go ahead with it. So, yeah, it's a little rough. I'm going to skip any attempt at doing an impression because that's what keeps making me laugh. And I'm just going to concentrate. It's just me, not Theory, and the computer machine, and we're just going to go with it.
Computer machine. I love it.
Anyway, we're going to jump right into the email this week, play our little email theme music. And go into some emails here. Now, let's talk about some general emails we got. First of all, I had a couple people emailing me about the distributed.net team, which I pimped on the show again. We have a distributed.net team, obviously. DDP set up distributed.net team. Have quite a few people in it. Last time I checked, we're in like the top, we're up to like 130 or somewhere thereabouts. So doing really well and climbing up in the standings slowly but surely. So if you're interested in helping out, donating some CPU time to that project, it's very simple to get started on. All you got to do is install the client, give it an email address that you want to use, and it will upload. It'll start crunching away with your idle CPU time. It doesn't affect any of your other processes. It runs at low priority. Anything that jumps in front of it will get full system time that it wants or needs. And this will only run when there's nothing else going on and run in the background. So, put this on your box, and the first time it uploads packets to the server, it will create an account for you with the email address that you registered with or that you input when you installed it. And to join the DDP team, you simply go out there and search for DDP. I'm pretty sure there's only one of us out there. And there's a little link at the bottom that says, I want to join this team, and you click on that. And that's all there is to it. So the only thing is you have to have uploaded some packets and have the account created. It's not something you go do. You don't go register. You don't go create an account. You don't need a password. You just go out there and install the client, and it'll automatically create an account once you send packets. So if it takes you a week to send packets, it'll take it another day or so to process them and create an account for you. So that's all you have to do. So if you need any more detailed instructions, step-by-step, more so than I just gave you, you can check out forums.binrev.com. Inside the forums, there is a special DDP projects with forum that has a pinned topic with all of those things I read to you and a little bit more. So go check that out.
Yep, definitely. Sign up. Put all your computer machines on it because we need them.
Every computer machine helps. We also got a follow-up email from last week from Byron, who gave us permission to use his name and his call letters, WTND. And Byron was the person who was volunteering or asking if we would mind putting Binary Revolution Radio on his FM station. So, yes, he completely got my point. Very cool. He understands that the reason we do this on the Internet is because we do occasionally use bad language. And we're allowed to use bad language on the global interweb. So we occasionally do that. So, he realizes that, but at the same time, we also realize that on FM, we are controlled by the FCC. So, it's great they can't bother us here, but in the real world, they still control that. So, I'm giving him permission verbally now, and I'm also going to be emailing him to give it to him in writing, that I do not mind him bleeping out the curse words. So, that is that. I will email him that soon, if not as soon as we're done recording here. I don't want to push my computer machine too hard. And let's see, what else do we have here? I got an email from Julius, who says, "Hi, Snack. Recently I asked Google to cancel, delete, some of my message out of their Usenet groups database, and they were very decent, helpful, and friendly about it, much to my surprise, I might add. One expects them to be like that huge money-making company we all have bad experiences with, but they are not. I'm a steady regular listener of the BinRev radio thing, okay. I'm from Amsterdam, the Netherlands, and yes, also to be considered a hacker, pretty much old school at that. I did and still do Dutch radio shows a lot like yours for about 18 years now. Your rants are exactly like mine most of the time, so keep it up. Love your show." Did I read that properly?
Yeah, it looks good.
I stumbled there a little bit. The English was a little... first of all, I think people who listen to the show regularly have probably noticed one pattern. If you send me an email from another country, it's pretty much a shoo-in that I'm going to read it on the air, because that's just so cool to me that somebody in Amsterdam is listening to our show. So that just continually blows my mind. Every time I get an email from somewhere, I guess, exotic like that, anywhere I can't go or have never been is exotic to me. Anytime I hear something from another country, that's really cool. So you're pretty much a lock that you're going to get it on the air. However, he also brought up something else, and that is about having posts removed from Google's news group archive, or Usenet archive, however you want to call it. I actually had some posts removed from there myself, just to see what the process was and see, you know, what kind of system they used and how they've done it. Have you ever tried to have anything removed, or do you not even touch the Usenet?
Oh, I used Usenet a long time ago, like when I was like 13 or 14, way back in the day. But I don't really touch it anymore. So, never bothered to have anything removed.
Aha. Uh-huh. Well, I went out there and had like two things removed. Just, they were like old... I forgot the account, actually. I think it was GNN, Global Network Navigator. Does that sound right?
Yeah, it could be.
It was like an ISP that came out. It was like a beta testing thing that I had used, and was playing around with that, and I posted a couple, like, tests, like, to off-topic or to alt tests or something like that. So I went and had a couple of those removed just to see what it was like in the process, and I didn't think it was quite... I mean, it was easy. It was really not much to it. You just got to send an email to them requesting that they remove the old posts or whatever. But, and so, yes, it was easy, but I didn't quite have such an easy time of it. I emailed them claiming, you know, this was my old email address, yada, yada, yada. And they wanted some very specific things to prove, well, not so much to prove it was me, and I think that kind of might be a problem. They wanted me to... say that, I guess they wanted it in writing, me saying that, yes, this is my post, explain to them the email address that it was posted from is different from the email address now, but it was me, and then have to provide my real name and information and officially request it being taken off. Now, I tried to get around this and just replied saying, yes, it's the same account but a different domain, I switched it, and tried to sneak by without giving the name, kind of like an oops, I forgot, and they would not do it until they got a real name. So, I finally did that, and I think, obviously, it's a legal issue. They have to have it in writing, I guess, to cover themselves. However, I don't know any way that they could possibly verify it, especially with all the different nicks that people have had and different, you know, Roger Rabbit 16472, all those AOL names that they just make up and attach numbers to and stuff.
My Little Pony 69, that was my old one.
Oh, let me search for that real quick. My Little Pony, golly, I haven't heard that in a while. Oh, man. I thought you went by Care Bear.
No, that was when I was a little younger, but then I grew up.
Oh, then you went into the My Little Pony phase. Oh, and then the gummy bears.
Oh, this is terrible.
Bouncing here and there and everywhere. Anyway, what I'm getting at here is I really think that if you were, you could probably have any post deleted if you, quite frankly, if you lied. I think if you send them an email, and if somebody wants to test it, go ahead. I'm not going that far. But I do think that if I wanted to go out there and delete My Little Pony 69 account, all I have to do is say, yes, this was my old account, my name is this, and I bet you they would probably remove it, because they must get a lot. I don't even know if I'd venture a guess as to how many requests they get like this. But I bet they get too many that they can go and check and verify all these names and stuff. I think as long as you admit it and give them legal have them waive their responsibility by you signing off on it, I think that's probably all they would take. So I bet you could have anybody's post removed if you really wanted to be, well, if you really wanted to cross a line. I'll just leave it at that.
Yeah.
I really do think that would work. So somebody wants to try it, let us know. I'd be curious to find out, but I'm not going there. So anyway, thank you for listening in Amsterdam and anywhere else out there. Email me from all over the global interweb if you'd like. And you'll probably get your letter read on the air. And we have one more email this week from Mac Cool. Hey, Dog and the DDP. Just want to drop you guys a line and tell you that I think your show is great. I just finished listening to all 58 episodes over the course of 3 or 4 weeks at work. I loved your rant on politics and hacking. Well, which one? I've had like a bazillion of them. I agree with you wholeheartedly. Well, anyway, keep up the great work. Looking forward to the next installment of Hack TV. Yeah, I'm sure what he must be saying is that the separation of hacking and politics, kind of like separation of church and state. It really should just keep those two things just diametrically opposed.
Yep.
It's not realistic, but try to anyway, as best we can. And listening to 58 episodes, is that what he said, over 3 or 4 weeks? I can't listen to myself 58 for a month straight, basically. Yeah, I could. Who am I kidding?
That's dedication, though, man. 58 episodes in, like, 3 weeks.
Yeah. Joking aside, I kind of relate to that because I'm sitting behind code all day listening to everybody's shows, or as many as I can get in, anyway. So I guess I kind of relate to that, but, man, it's still impressive to hear somebody say they did 58 shows in a month. That's a lot. Now, also, as in kind of a segue here, the next installment of Hack TV. I'm going to actually use this to kind of segue into the show-and-tell portion of the show, if you will, and say that that's actually what I was doing before Not Theory called and bugged me. I was over on the other computer machine on the other side of the room, and I plugged in my video recording machine to it and was extracting footage. So, I am hard at work on the next episode of Hack TV. Well, multiple episodes. I've got quite a bit of footage on tape that I have not had time to digitize until recently, and then I had a hardware failure this week that I had to take care of, and then I had to get a cleaning tape from my mini DV cam, so it's just been one hurdle after another. So, I just extracted footage from one tape before we started recording, and as soon as we're done, I'll probably start another one. And it's coming along slowly but surely. Been writing some articles lately. Getting ready for Binary Revolution Magazine 2.2. So that's coming along slowly but surely as well. And dealing with, my biggest concern right now is that there's a giant, earth-shattering, devastating hurricane aimed straight for my front porch. Hurricane Francis. By the time you're listening to this, Hurricane Francis will probably be a day or two away from me. And I'll know, because right now it's heading in a beeline straight for my house. And I mean, like, straight where I live is right in the center of the cone of this thing, the estimated path.
You got insurance, right?
I don't think I have insurance on the computer machine.
Not on the computer machine, but no. I mean for everything else.
Yeah, living in condo life down here in South Florida, it's required. Hurricane insurance is pretty much mandatory.
Nice.
So yes, I have building insurance and stuff like that. So yes, the important, you know, the real expensive, all the money stuff. But all my contents, no, I do not have content insurance, and I will be SOL. I'm going to be like floating along with my monitor held above my head, trying to tread water so it doesn't get destroyed. It's not going to be cool if this thing keeps coming right towards me like it's doing now. I might actually skip town. I honestly, truly, if there's no episode, I'll tell you now, if there's no episode 61 next week, you guys know why. It's because I got the hell out of Dodge. This thing is a Category 4, and it's still like 5 days away. That means it's only going to get bigger and grow as it gets closer and closer to us. So this is not going to be cool. So anyway, I'm going to cry like a little girl and run. If it keeps coming towards me. I'm going to go park my car in a parking garage or something where it's covered so, you know, like bricks don't come flying through the Stankmobile's windows. And, I don't know, head north or head south, depending on where the thing's going. This one really, I mean, joking aside, this one really is serious enough. I've never, ever left for any of the hurricanes. I've lived down here, what, 7 years or so? I've never, ever given them a second glance. I've slept through most of them. But this one, it's not looking good. I'm hoping it turns and goes back out to sea, but we'll see. So that's my thing, and dealing with some DDP turmoil, if you will, which we are not going to go into on this episode of the show next week.
Oh, but stay.
I know, but you know what? We might end with a little note, but we got some roster changes coming up, and I think people know a lot of it, the regular listeners and regular forum members know and have seen what's going on, and you know what? It's all good. People got to do what they got to do, and we're all happy about the whole thing. So it's nothing bad. It's nothing negative. Don't start any of the Fed rumors. Don't start any of the stupid things that people make up. It's nothing like that at all. So I guess that's all I have to say about that for now. Now that's it for me and all my work. What are you doing on your computer machines?
Nothing. That's it. Do you want to close up the show?
All right. Well, thank you for listening. And, like we always tell you, we'll see you... Oh, no, wait a minute. We had something else we were going to talk about.
Oh, yeah. I've been doing a lot of stuff on the computer machine. Like, I'm surprised the thing hasn't broken down. I haven't given it an oil change or anything recently. And it's still humming along.
Every 30,000 miles, or...?
Every 30,000 keystrokes. Yeah.
Every 3,000 miles, every 30,000 keystrokes.
Yep. Yeah, I've been doing lots of work on Bell's Mind. I've been trying to roll out Bell's Mind 2.0 because I realized that the original, you know, Bell's Mind is cool and people like it and they give me shouts for it all the time and stuff like that. It's cool, but it needs some more features.
Well, 1.0 is the sucksore. That's why 2.0 has to come out.
Well, that's what I'm talking about.
Okay.
But people still like 1.0. Even though it's missing some stuff, people like it. Most notably, it's missing the search feature and search by, like, you know, number type and all that other kind of stuff. You can like look at an exchange, or you can look at like a state or something like that and search like that, but it's not really detailed. Of course, Natus found out that he could just use Google to search my site, because Google indexes my site all the time.
Woot.
So that's pretty neat. But I would actually like to have my own real search feature, so going to be adding a search feature, going to be adding a bunch of things to make people's lives easier when submitting numbers. I'm going to try to make some software so people can batch submit numbers more easily and stuff like that. I don't know, lots of stuff's coming. And I need some input from people. There's a couple people who have sent me feature requests. Some of them good, some of them a little too involved to be feasible for this version 2.0, maybe version 3.0. But yeah, in any case, I would still like people's suggestions on how they think the site should work and whatever, because I don't want to release it and then get a whole bunch of complaints saying, well, why doesn't searching work like this? So, whatever. Give me some suggestions. Let me know what the deal is. That's about it. I did discover a bug in Postgres while doing all this.
Yes, why don't you talk about that just a little bit?
I can't really track down, I can't reproduce the bug except on one machine. Like, I think they're the same version. If they're not the same version, they're only like one minor version off. But on one of my computers, sorry, hold on a second.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Now, Postgres, of course, is referring back to, if you remember a couple weeks ago, I don't remember exactly which episode it was, but we went into some detail and talked about relational database management systems and what they were, and Postgres, of course, is Postgres, PostgresQL, whatever you want to call it, is a type of relational database management system, and it is one that we both think very highly of.
Yeah, it is definitely the litmus. So, sorry about the minor interruption.
I just went right on through it.
Good. So what I was saying is that I think either, you know, two different versions of Postgres or two very close versions of Postgres on two different machines, but with the same database, with only some, you know, only some minor differences between the two. And on one machine, when it tries to do the certain search, it uses the index. But on the other machine, when it tries to do the search, it doesn't. And can't really figure it out. I'm gonna do a little more work to try to track it down, but I can't imagine why any database would ever see that it has an index for a field, see that it's doing a search, and then not search using the index. That just makes no sense to me.
Well, actually, I think that also happens with SQL Server 2000. Obviously, the solutions would probably be similar but different. So, doing research, you know, on SQL Server 2000 to cause it might not be any help to you.
It looks to me actually like the only possibility I can come up with now is the machine where it's not doing the search correctly, where it's doing the sequential search as opposed to the index search, has more indexes on the same field. Now, that might sound a little like nonsense at first, but I'd have to go into like the whole organization of the database. In any case, this one field has two indexes.
You don't have duplicate named indexes, right?
No, not at all. They're kind of hard to explain, but it has two indexes for separate purposes. They need to be separate. So in any case, when it sees that there's those two indexes, I guess it doesn't know which one to use and doesn't use either. That's the only thing I can really think. There's an option in Postgres called Enable Sequential Scan, and I just turn that off. And what that tells Postgres is anytime that it sees a field that is indexed and it's going to do a search on it, it doesn't give it the option of not using the index. Now, some people have told me in some instances it's faster to do a sequential search depending on what type of search you're doing and all this other kind of stuff. I don't know. I'm not all that into databases, so I wouldn't know when that comes up. But in any case, I've set my Postgres up now so that every time it's doing a search, if there's an index, it's got to use it. And the speed increase is insane. Like, queries go from like 4 seconds to like 60 milliseconds. So,
yeah, it's almost always more efficient to use indexes. Almost always. The only time you ever want to do sequential is if it's a tiny database that fits in one table space.
Yeah.
And if it's a very simple key and it's sequenced, by one field and it's ordered, like say alphabetically or numerically 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Sometimes it'll be faster to read it sequentially that way.
Right.
But in general, for any type of complex, even semi-complex databases, it's almost always better to use an index.
Yeah.
Or indices.
Yeah, that was my impression, but I don't know. I'll have to look a little bit more into it and maybe submit some bugs to the Postgres team or, you know, see what they have to say about it. Yeah. But in any case, Postgres is still the most elite open source database out there.
Word.
It's like I said, it may have this problem, but I can fix it with a simple flag, so biggity bam.
There you go. Yeah, see, and SQL Server, I've heard something similar to that too, and again, it's a server setting that you can change. What it is it sometimes will try, and part of the relational database management system itself, part of the internal workings of it, it tries to determine on its own the best way to read a database, the best way to execute a query.
Right.
And if you can look at the plan for that query and watch it step by step through, you'll see where the bottleneck is, you'll see where it's locking up, and what happens is built into that database management system, sometimes it will think that one way is a better way to read the table when in actuality it's not. So you'd have to go in and change a system setting or change some of the table definitions to override that, and obviously that's exactly what you're going to look into a little bit.
Yeah. And so, Postgres has a nice command, just explain and then your statement, and it'll explain what the planner is trying to do with your statement, and then you can, like you said, track down why it's not doing something efficiently.
Exactly.
So.
And that's something
that... Let me think. There's going to be a little more integration with the PBX for Beltline 2.0. There's a... going to be some voicemail features and some other stuff I'm going to try to integrate, but I don't know. Soon. not just yet. It's all still in beta. So once it's ready, I'll start showing it to people.
So it's like beta is like 1.1B. Is that what the version we're on now, or what?
No, it's actually just 2.0 beta. I'm not going for any intermediate.
Oh, no, come on. You got to do like an odd numbers means it's an unstable release.
Oh, no. Not quite.
That's not
but right. I am probably going to keep around the old version for a while, because I know that there's a lot of links out there that link directly to, like particular searches, like particular exchanges and stuff like that. So I'm going to leave that around for a while and just kind of give people a heads up that it's all going to be changing over to this version 2.0 style. So hopefully they'll update their links.
That's an interesting. Maybe, I don't know if the possibility of overloading functions in PHP are, but anyway, that's a whole different thing. Let's actually back up a little bit and use, you mentioned PBXs, let's kind of use that as a segue, if I may, into what our main topic tonight is going to be, and that is, surprise, PBXs.
Oh, look at that. I would have never guessed.
How did that happen?
I don't know.
And actually, let's give a little backstory here. First of all, not theory is the man. Can't say that enough. He is the leet.
Oh, my God.
The uber leet.
Oh, I'm so flattered by my public.
And, no, joking aside, we got an email a couple weeks ago from somebody who basically asked, said he wanted to learn more about PBXs, and frankly, I did as well. And everything that I know about PBXs, I did learn from Not Theory, joking aside, so I knew right away when I got that email that I had to get you on the show, and that's the reason you're on the show, because we're going to talk about PBXs. Starting, like, with the simplest of simple questions, and that is, what is a PBX?
Okay. PBX stands for Private Branch Exchange, which is a fancy way of saying a phone system. But phone company people have to make it sound like Uber Lead, so that's what they call it. In any case, a PBX is just basically any type of machine that's got, you know, phone lines coming into it and or VoIP lines coming into it.
What kind of machine?
It could be a computer. It could be just like a strictly...
A computer machine.
It could be a general-purpose computer machine, or it could be a specific machine that only does phone system-type junk. Like you might buy from Panasonic. They have business PBXs and stuff like that. So, but yeah, it has lines coming into it and going out of it, and basically it handles phone calls. It handles phone routing. Somebody calls into a certain line, it rings a certain phone. Or they call into another line, and it, you know, transfers it to somebody's voicemail box.
So this is like a phone company thing, right? This is not something that you would have in your house.
Not, well, you know, some people like me who are complete losers have it in their house. most people would not have a phone system in their house, unless maybe you're like either a geek or you're really rich and you have a house that has, you know, like 20 phones in it or something like that.
Or you're partaking in the renaissance of the freaking community.
Yes.
See, that was a little segue question. That's what that was. But, you know, I really, you know, it really is kind of a thought of as a business thing the majority of the time, right? Who wants or needs a PBX with all of those features other than businesses? Even some small businesses, obviously phone companies use stuff like this, but this is becoming something that is very, very accessible to people like us, especially hackers who really want to play around with this kind of stuff.
Especially, you brought up a very good point the other night, saying that you wanted to ditch Bell South because they're a bunch of fucktards.
Yes, I did. And yes, they are.
Yeah, I'm sure they are. And if you have cable internet, and you go and pay a voice over IP provider for what's called a DID, which stands for Direct Inward Dial, which is a telco fancy term for phone number, you can drop your phone company, you can get a phone number in pretty much any exchange in the U.S. that you want, and you can point it to your PBX. Now,
well, let's wait a minute. Before we throw the PBX in the mix, let's stay very simple.
Okay.
Voice over IP itself. Now, we've dropped names like Vonage. This is, I know Default Radio talks about this stuff a lot more often,
right.
And frankly, a lot of it goes right over my head. I'm not into the freaking that. I'm learning a lot about it and honestly getting interested in it, but let's stay very simple here. You can get Vonage or Packet 8, or any number of other consumer level, and that's why I want to differentiate between consumer level and others, consumer level voice over IP hardware or functionality.
Right.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Sorry, the big players in consumer VoIP right now are Vonage, Packet 8, Voice Pulse, one called VoIP to Save or something like that, but I don't know anybody who's gotten that yet.
Yeah, and there's quite a few popping up each day, I believe.
Yeah, they're kind of all over the place, and they all use this protocol or some modified form of SIP, which is the Session Initiation Protocol. And basically, it's a very simple protocol used for these little boxes that they send you that let you have either one or two incoming lines, and that's pretty much it. It adds some nice features like call waiting and three-way calling and all that other junk, but it's SIP is designed for computers for consumers.
All right, so I can buy Vonage, put the hardware in my house, use my internet connection to still have a phone number, still get incoming calls, and get rid of Bell South or whatever your local telco. First and foremost, that is a straight standard. That is a simple thing that anybody can do.
Right, right.
Okay.
They'll provide you voicemail and all that other neat stuff that they should provide because it's easy.
All right, so that's layer one, that's level one and stuff that a lot of people know about. But the next step beyond that is the functionality that you can get from a PBX. But
right.
How much different is a PBX? What is the relationship between a PBX and any of these consumer voice providers, if any? I know that's really a vague...
Well, for the consumer-based SIP providers, you can consider your phone as just basically like a phone hooked up to, like, let's say Vonage. Let's use Vonage.
Okay.
Your little box in your house is basically, it looks like a phone that's hooked up to the switch at Vonage. Now, when you go into these business class providers, your PBX at your place looks like another phone switch, meaning that it can have multiple phone numbers, it can handle multiple incoming and outgoing calls at the same time, usually only limited up to your bandwidth, and it gives you basically all the flexibility you could want. Any type of limitation you've got with SIP, like that you can only make one outgoing call, or that you only get voicemail stored on their server or something like that, completely eliminated with business class VoIP, which uses a protocol called IAX, which stands for the Inter-Asterisk Exchange Protocol. So
a PBX then is something that once we, like we said earlier, joking, that businesses would use the business equivalent of VoIP.
Yeah.
To allow VoIP to access to businesses and still give them the functionality they're used to, I guess.
Right, and what I'm talking about right now is actually just asterisk PBXs. There are other PBXs out there that use other protocols, but for our discussion, since those other PBXs cost money, or, you know, most of them cost money, but they're not very standard, and I don't know. I'd much rather just talk about asterisk to keep it simple.
Yeah, and that's actually a very good point, because that is the reason that suddenly the word PBX and that there's such a renaissance and learning about this stuff is because asterisk came about. And asterisk is, of course, an open source PBX software. Is that?
Yep. Yep. If anybody wants to check out asterisk, you go to asterisk.org or you go to digium.org. Or is it digium.com? I think it's digium.com, actually. Those are the guys who write asterisk. And you can get the source code from them, and you can buy hardware for your asterisk box and all that, all through them. Yeah, I don't know. Basically, it gives you, like I said, it gives you the flexibility to have pretty much a phone switch in your house. Anything that's going in or out of your PBX, you determine the routing by using this pretty simple text file configuration called a dial plan. So you can make it so that when you pick up your phone and you dial, you know, you dial 4 or something like that, it dials your friend's house or something like that. Or you can make it so you can dial 9 for an outgoing line and then dial your calls. You can have a bunch of phones hanging off your PBX, and you can call back and forth in between them with extension numbers. You can give voicemail to everybody. I mean, there's anything you can imagine the phone company doing for you, you can do on your, you know, on your own site with asterisk.
All right, so how exactly would somebody like me, for example, I do want to get rid of Bell South. I do not have a consumer-level VoIP product right now.
Right.
First of all, VoIP, the consumer VoIP, like, say, again, let's stick with Vonage, is an out-of-the-box plug-and-play, for the most part, kind of deal.
Right.
Non-technical, and they've pretty much watered it down so that just about anybody can follow directions to get it up and running, correct?
Right, exactly.
But it's,
you plug it into your network, you plug your phone into it, you turn it on, you pick up your phone, you're making calls. That's it.
And it offers you voicemail boxes. It offers you
features. They offer you voicemail, but the voicemail resides on their server. So you have to have internet connectivity, or you have to be able to, like, call up your number to retrieve your voicemail.
Hmm. if the global interweb goes down,
then you have no voicemail. And you have no phone.
Well, and that's also technically true with the PBX as well.
Yes, with the PBX, you lose the ability to make incoming and outgoing calls. You can still make local calls in your PBX. Even if your internet access is down, you can call your local extensions, and you can call your local voicemail. So,
would
have an advantage there.
All right, so let's say that somebody does want to go through with setting this up. First of all, the software we mentioned, Asterisk. That's the one that's very popular, very flexible, and really just taken off here lately. So somebody needs to get a box at home and put Asterisk on it to get started into this. Now, how intensive is Asterisk? How much, you need a gig of RAM, you need like a P4 dual processor, you know, what exactly do you need to run this extremely high-end Asterisk software?
Okay, for the minimum requirements for Asterisk are a quad Opteron with a terabyte of RAM.
Man. See, no wonder businesses are the only people that use Asterisk. Oh, wait a minute. Wait a minute. That's not right, is it?
No, that's not right at all.
That's
honestly
a misconception.
You can run Asterisk. You know, I would say the lowest you'd probably want to go is like a P2-300. But you could probably get away with going even lower than that. I've heard of people running it on slower machines than that. But yeah, a P2-300 with 64 megs of RAM, maybe 128 megs, but you don't really need that much. If your machine's only going to be running Asterisk, you're not going to need that much. But that also depends on the host operating system, whether you're running, because Asterisk runs on three platforms now, as far as I know. Linux being the platform it started on. People tell me it runs on Mac OS now as well, but I think only OS X. And people also tell me it runs on Windows. Now, the requirements on Linux versus the requirements on Mac OS X and Windows are going to be wildly different. Linux is by far the most efficient to run the PBX on. Doesn't need any graphical user interface, doesn't need any of that junk. You can just run it bare bones, PBX only. So if you want to run it on Linux, 300 megahertz P2, and 64 megs of RAM should get you up and running.
And that's just amazing. That's why we made a joke of there's a misconception that you need some kind of big, powerful, you know, phone equipment. It's not the case at all.
Yeah, definitely not.
So, okay, let's say, so most people probably, well, a lot of people probably have a box like that laying around under a shelf not being used. So pull that thing out of mothballs or run down and buy one for $100 or $50 at the swap shop and come home, slap Asterisk on there, install Asterisk, and hardware-wise, you get Asterisk up and running. You get the software installed, you get Linux installed, you get Asterisk installed, and it's time to actually set up the connection itself. Now, what else do they need besides that? What's the next step?
Okay, there's a couple ways to do it. You can go all voice over IP, or you can hook up regular phones to it and regular phone lines to it. If you go all voice over IP, it's going to be much cheaper because you don't need to buy any hardware. Everything goes in and out through your Ethernet card. To do that, you're going to need to get service from an IAX provider. And the one I would suggest for everybody is VoicePulse Connect, and their website is connect.voicepulse.com. You can go there. You can get an inward number, the DID I was talking about before, for like I think it's $8 a month. Choose wherever you want. All your incoming calls are free. All your outgoing calls in the U.S., the continental U.S., is like 2 cents a minute. So that'll get you started right there with outgoing calls and incoming calls. And then from there, you can use a soft phone in your Windows box or something to connect to your Asterisk box and make calls from there. You know, use a little headset or something like that. You can dial the number on the screen. And that's it. That'll get you started all voice over IP. You could also get a hardware SIP phone.
Okay, I was going to say, well, let's somebody like me, for example, I want to add the functionality, but I don't want to. I want everything to still be as natural or like everybody thinks of normal phones. I still want to have a phone in the kitchen. Still want to have a phone in the bedroom. I still want to have a phone on the John. Okay, I don't have a phone on the John, but I still want to have my phones in different parts of the house and keep typical phone equipment that I can pick up. I don't want to have to go to the computer and use a soft phone every time. So the alternative
saying,
to that
the lowest
is
lowest cost of entry would be to do all voice over IP. But if you want to use your hardware phones,
right,
you can do a couple of things. You can get what's called an FXS card, which is Digium sells one. It's a four port extension card. You hook your phone up to it, and it simulates, you know, the ringing and all that other kind of stuff. It basically looks to your phone as if it's a phone line. So you plug your phone or your phone line in your house. You can wire that into this FXS card if you know how. And then you can just pick up your phones and use them as you always did. It handles all the translation from VoIP and back and all that other nonsense.
Okay, but like you said...
But that card costs $100.
Right, I was going to say, like you said, that's an extra piece of hardware.
Yeah.
And you said that's about $100 for that.
Yeah, it's a PCI card. And honestly, you know, I have one, and I'm not very happy with it. It's kind of annoying. I mean, it works, but it's kind of an annoying piece of hardware. To anyone else, I would suggest that for the same price, you can get a device called the IAXY. That's IAXY. It's $100 again. But you plug your phone into that, and then it uses the IAX protocol to talk to your asterisk box. The advantage of that over a piece of hardware like a PCI card is that you don't have it stuck in your machine. If you want to go somewhere else with your IAXY and use it to connect to your box remotely or use it to connect to an IAX provider directly, you can bring this box wherever you want to go, and you can use your IAX service from there. So that's really cool. It offers you a lot more flexibility.
Hmm.
And it's easier to debug, too, because it's a nice separate piece of hardware that's very simple.
And where would somebody purchase such a device?
Digium.com.
Isn't that convenient?
Yep. Right on their main page, it should say IAXY, the IAXY, $100.
Okay,
cool piece of hardware. Natus has one, and he says he likes it. He said there was a couple of problems with it, but the device only came out maybe a couple of months ago, so... I'm sure they're working through the bugs, and from my experience, Digium has been really good with technical support. So if you have problems and you email them about it, they're going to get on top of it.
Okay, so let's back up here. So what you're telling me is I can get rid of Bell South, all the services. You know, I'm not sure what their full service. I think it's like $50 for a complete choice package or whatever. And I'm sure everybody's telco has something similar, whatever. With all the features and call waiting and blah, blah, blah. $50 a month. So you're telling me I can pull an old computer out of mothballs or pick one up from dumpster diving or get one, I mean, a very, very cheap low-end computer.
Right.
I can install this free operating system,
mm-hmm.
install asterisk free soft PBX software.
Yep.
And... either A, tie it into a Windows soft phone, which is also free, many of them freely available. And all I would have to pay would be around $8, $10, something like that a month through Voice Pulse Connect. And for $8 a month, I'm getting everything that I was getting for $50 a month for $8 a month, and then more features on top of that they don't even normally offer people?
Right.
Like multiple voicemail boxes, they're stored locally instead of remotely.
Right, and you can add as many as you want. You never have to, like, ask anybody if you can get a new one. You don't have to call somebody up and say, I need another voicemail box for my daughter or something like that. You just create it on the fly. You record your own prompts. You can make your own interactive voice response where people can navigate through menus if you want to be that annoying. You can do all that. But the only difference between the $8 you're spending at Voice Pulse Connect and the $55 you're spending with Bell South is that Bell South will give you unlimited outbound calling. Now, IAX providers don't offer unlimited outbound calling because, like I said, your asterisk box basically looks like a phone switch. You can make as many outgoing calls you want simultaneously as you have bandwidth for. So they don't want you, like, you know, spending $50 a month getting unlimited service and then making 400 outbound calls simultaneously all day. So you're going to be paying per minute for your phone calls. That's the trick.
So you have to sit down, I guess, and determine how many outgoing calls you make, but your incoming calls are included as part of the number.
Yeah. The incoming calls are all free. And you can handle multiple incoming calls at the same time. So
for, again, somebody like me, I have a cell phone that I can make all the outgoing calls I want on and have all my incoming calls to the house going through this box.
Right.
So basically have, I mean, that already to me is useful. But
right.
To take it, so bottom line is there for free. If you already have some type of solution for outgoing calls, like a cell phone or something like that. Even if you don't, did you say earlier it was like 2 cents a minute for outgoing?
Yeah.
Something like that? That's still not all that, you know, that's end up probably
right,
be cheaper than Bell South.
How many minutes you spend on the phone. If you spend a lot of time on the phone, though, what you could do is you could get something like Vonage. And you can buy what's called a line card, an FXO card, plug that into your asterisk box, and hook that to your Vonage line, which basically it would take the phone cord from your Vonage line and plug it into your box, and your box would treat it as an outgoing line. Then you could use Vonage to make unlimited calls, but again, only one call at a time. So.
And again, that's what Vonage is, what, 30 a month?
Something like that, yeah.
Something like that, and it's probably a packet 8. I don't know if you guys are still as... We're not happy with Packet 8, is that correct?
No, Packet 8, when I got it a long time ago, man, it was awesome. And then, like, tons of people started signing on, and it got worse and worse, and then I just canceled it. Packet 8 has some nice features in that they offer unlimited U.S. and Canada for one price, then you can add unlimited Western Europe, and then you could add unlimited international, which is almost, I wouldn't say almost every country in the world, but, like, many, many, many countries in the world, South America, Asia, you know, all the countries in Asia that I saw were, you know, where every place you could imagine to call, a bunch of countries in South America, a bunch of places in Australia, you know, Japan, all kinds of other stuff. The only place it didn't offer was Africa. Not really quite sure why, but in any case, so if you want unlimited international calls, Packet 8 might be an option, but I can't vouch for their reliability. Lingo, also, www.lingo.com, they offer unlimited Western Europe with their basic plan, and then they have, I think they also have an unlimited international plan as well, but I haven't checked it out. Their unlimited Europe plan is pretty good. I've been playing around with it for a bit, you know, doing a little war dialing in the UK, and it's worked all right. So if you're looking to do stuff like that, there are places you can go to get unlimited calls. But if you don't make that many calls, you know, $55 a month you spend with Bell South may be overkill. If you only make, you know, a couple hours of phone calls a month, you know, you don't need to spend $55. You're paying for, like, what you actually use in Voice Pulse Connect, which is really nice.
Yeah, that's very nice. Again, especially if you don't make a lot of outgoing calls. And that's, again, to be determined by each individual person. But the point being, you can set up a PBX of your own in your house where you have control over it, and you're not at the mercy of your local telco anymore and them setting the prices and giving you what options and features you want. By getting a PBX and setting up your own PBX, which is really the first step. All the other stuff we're saying, you know, you could do this, you could do it completely for free almost with using Softphone, or you could tie it into your VoIP line, or you could tie it into other things, or you could tie it into Voice Pulse Connect, or you could... There's so many different ors, but the key to all of this is having that PBX. So stage one would be pulling out the computer, putting the software on there, and trying it, getting it set up and running. Is that definitely the first step to try?
Yeah, definitely.
And how difficult would you say Asterisk is to get up and running?
Well, let me tell everybody right now, when you get Asterisk, do not get a binary package of it. Get the latest source code you can from the CVS and compile it yourself and install it. From there, you're going to want to go to a website called VoIP, VoIP-info.org. And those guys have all kinds of information about setting Asterisk up and doing, you know, doing scripting with Asterisk, everything like that. It's not easy to set up. I'm not going to lie to anybody. It is a pain in the ass, especially at first. You know, stuff just seems to not work for no reason. After a little while, you'll kind of get the hang of it, and it'll be a little bit easier. But I'd say the first week or so is going to be annoying. You know, things aren't going to work the way you think they are. But once you get it up and running, very cool, very worth it.
And, of course, they can always come by the forums, forums.benrev.com. Any
yep.
questions and posts, because quite a few of our users have some experience with this.
Yeah, and I have a lot of personal notes, like on my machine, you know, saved different places about, you know, problems that I've run into and solutions that I've come across for them. And when I get some time, I'm not going to promise this anytime soon, but when I get some time, I'm going to take those files, polish them up a little bit, and put them on Bell's line. I'm going to have a section dedicated to, like, configuring Asterisk and dealing with Asterisk problems and stuff like that. Because, you know, I use Asterisk for the Bell's 9 PBX, and, you know, I work with it extensively every day and do some really weird stuff with it. So figure I'll share that knowledge with everybody.
Very cool. Very, very cool. Now, let's say someone is putting the software on. Like you said, it might be a little tricky to get set up the first time. Can they tinker around and get this set up and working with their, for example, Bell South line or whatever line they happen to be using? Can they tie it in and get it working with that as a first step before they go canceling anything?
Yeah, the only thing they're going to need to do is buy one of those FXO cards to hook it up to
right.
their, hook the Asterisk box up to their phone line. Digium sells something called the X100P, which I think is like $75 or maybe $100 or something like that. But you can look anywhere online. If you go into Google, type X100P, no spaces, hit enter, you'll get a billion links that say X100P clone, $20. Some of them even $15. I got one for $12 at one point when the clones first came out. You can get a clone card, and that will let you hook up your phone line to your Astros box very cheaply. You're not going to get support from Digium if they know that you have a clone card, but there's, like I said, tons of people online will be willing to help you out. And I know for a fact that these things work because a lot of people I know are using them. So for $15 investment, you can get started with Asterisk with your current phone line.
Yeah, and a lot of people, they just might be more comfortable doing that to see and get it up and working, and then they can start tweaking and configuring Asterisk, which is the other cool and fun, addictive part of the whole thing. For example, like the, what do they call it, the Crazy Ex-Girlfriend script, for example.
Oh, yeah.
You have a lot of control.
Crazy Ex-Girlfriend and then routing them to a busy signal.
Yeah, you can...
Routing them to some error message, yeah.
Yeah, and you, I don't know how much detail did you want to talk about some of the things that you can do. Some of the power that you have over Asterisk with scripting and with the configuration files, etc.
Yeah, the
What is the Crazy Ex-Girlfriend script for those who don't know?
The Crazy Ex-Girlfriend script is basically a script that I don't even think it's a script. I think it may be just, you know, part of the dial plan text configuration file. Basically, it says if the caller ID matches this certain number, either send it to an extension that rings forever, or send it to a busy signal always. So anytime this person calls your number, they're always going to get a busy signal. They're always going to have it ring forever, so it's going to look like you're not home.
Or you could send it to a, I think the joke that I read, the one that made me laugh, was sending them to a voicemail box with a pre-recorded message saying, hey, you crazy bitch, stop calling my house.
Yeah, or to the rejection hotline. If people go to Google and type in the rejection hotline and search for that, you'll find this phone number you can call to give it to people that you want to reject, basically. It's got a really funny message, so definitely call it, check it out. So yeah, you could forward it to that, no problem. And again, if people don't want to spend any money to get into Asterisk, you can always register with Free World Dial-Up. That's fwd.pulver.com. And you can use Asterisk with Free World Dial-Up. You can call up your Asterisk box from Free World Dial-Up and play with it from there. Then you don't need to buy a line card, and you don't need to subscribe to Voice Pulse Connect. So
okay,
that might be a viable option.
Very cool. So PBX is like having a miniature phone company of your own, really.
Yep. And if you want to get really involved, once you get into it, you know, you and your friends, if you all have Asterisk boxes, you can link them together. You can make, like, private phone calls between your box and their box. So you can make, like, your own little phone network between you and your friends. So pretty cool.
Set up voicemail boxes for all your friends. And the important thing, again, to emphasize, without going into any more detail than we already have, is the scripting. Well, I'm sorry, I'm saying scripting, but basically the configuration files and some scripting you can do on top of it, but a lot of the control that you have. You can do silly things like at a certain time of the day change the menu system or change the message that's sent. Like if you, a business, for example, that closes at 5 o'clock. 5 o'clock comes, you say, sorry, but our offices are now closed, and send it to a voicemail box at the end of the day.
Right.
Things like
that.
They
have an example of that for businesses that handle, like, technical support calls. When people call in, they'll get a message saying, you know, you're being placed in the queue, and then they'll get music on hold until, you know, a technician picks up. At 5 o'clock, instead of routing them to that queue, it'll route them to this message that says, we're closed, like you said. But the people who were already waiting in the queue from before 5 o'clock will still get through to technical support, you know, once their lines are not busy anymore. So that timed menu change is very cool. You know, and even on your home PBX, you could have the menus change and say, you know, put it straight to your voicemail box while you're at work. But when you come home, have it ring your home phone, you know, your little desk phone or something like that. So.
Right, yeah, and I'm not sure if we even made that clear, but your PBX is going to be picking up the phone. However you have it set up, you can have those, even though they're very, very annoying sometimes, those menu systems. Press 1 to talk to Stank Dog, press 2 to talk to Not Theory, press 3 to, and you know, and route it accordingly, or send it to a voicemail box accordingly, etc., etc. You have all that control now with this box. Now, why don't you talk about some of the things specifically. And again, some of the regular listeners, this may be repetition, this part of it, but give a short version of some of the stuff that you've used this for on the Bell's Mind PBX. Like the shows and...
Yeah, well, the shows are pretty simple. Basically, I take all the shows from MP3 files. I convert them to waves, I normalize them, and convert them to GSM file format, because Asterisk deals with the GSM file format the best. And basically, I just have my menu wait for you to type in a number, and then it looks for that file on the disk. Like if you type in 058 on the binrev menu, it looks for binrev 058.gsm. And if it's there, then it starts playing it. Otherwise, it's supposed to take you back to the menu, but right now it hangs up because I'm too lazy to modify it. But
so if somebody wants to listen to episode 60 of Binary Revolution Radio, what we are playing right now, they can dial, tell them exactly how to get to it.
You dial 810-223-0003. That's the number for the PBX. When you get to the main menu, you dial 3 for Binary Revolution Radio Archive, and then you dial 060, and it'll say, now playing Binary Revolution Radio, episode 60, and then you'll get into the show. And I'm actually using this fairly new piece of software for Asterisk called Control Playback, where if you want to fast forward or rewind or pause, you can do that. Fast forward is 9, fast forward is 5 seconds, rewind is 7, rewind's 5 seconds. Or stars to pause it. So if you're listening to this show, let's say you're at work, you got nothing to do, you know, you're doing like, you know, your nighttime security job or something like that, and there's nothing to do. Call it to PBX, listen to some shows, you get call waiting or something like that. Hit star, flash over to your call waiting, talk to that person, hang up on your call waiting, hit star again, you're back to where you were on the show. So
very, very cool.
But I mean, that doesn't even involve the Aster scripting. The Aster scripting, I mean, you can just do ridiculously crazy things. You use this thing called AGI, which is the Application Gateway Interface, and basically you write a Perl script, or you could write a PHP script, or a script in pretty much any language, and you could say, you know, you can read digits from the user, you can play back files to the user, you can transfer them to different places, you can place calls from inside a script. So basically anything the Asterisk PBX can do, you can do that with your scripts. So you could set up trying to think of a
good example. I know I'm trying to think of one myself.
It's difficult because I do have some good examples, but they're all kind of like covert features that I haven't really released yet. So,
well, perhaps on a future episode, but I think generally we've gotten the point across of how flexible it really is.
Yeah.
And you know what, like, you know, we've said about Linux in general and Linux software in general, it's all for the most part pretty flexible because of the fact that you have control. You know, that's what's so great about open source in general, is you have control, you can configure things to take advantage of all the features that are offered by the software, but then you can also script things behind it to automate a lot of stuff, and the same holds true with Asterisk, just like any other piece of software.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
It's definitely great.
Add-on scripting is a nice way to implement features that you didn't, you know, that weren't in the initial implementation. So
very cool.
And I have to say that most open source projects, you know, maybe I'll write some scripts that add on to it or something like that. Like Asterisk, I'll write a Perl script that does this or that or this. Asterisk is one of the first projects, first open source projects that I've actually gone in and added features to the actual source code. Because most of the time I'm just too lazy. If a piece of software doesn't have the feature I want, I just don't use it. But Asterisk, there were a couple of features missing from the administrative console. And I added those into the source code. And it was pretty easy. The Asterisk source code, I got to say, while in some places the comments aren't so good, it was easy enough for me in, I'd say, about 20 minutes to jump in there and add the feature that I needed. So definitely worth your time. If you're looking to do something really cool or weird, poke through the source code and see what you can find. And I think you'll be surprised.
Well, I think that was a whole lot of information compressed into this show. And if people are like me, they might be listening back to this twice or three times to make sure they picked up on everything. But we will definitely include links. We're going to have a lot of links in the show notes to all of the things we've talked about on the show tonight.
Yep, definitely.
Is there anything we left off or anything else you wanted to mention?
I don't know. I wish I had a lot more time to do this because there really are a lot of things to...
Yeah, I mean, we could really go into a lot more detail on it and a lot of other suggestions and ideas, but yeah, there's just certain limits that we have to deal with. But I mean, I want to motivate people, and I want people to feel confident to start and give this a shot. Is there anything we left out that to convince people to do this. It's very low overhead hardware-wise. Get in, the software obviously is free to download and get set up and installed. And again, the hardware options to even get started in testing are very cheap. And once you're comfortable with that, I think that would be the way I would personally start. Buy a couple of cheap hardware things to connect it to the phone that I have in the house. And once I feel comfortable using it, and I've learned how to script, and I've learned how to deal with the configuration files and stuff like that, then I would take the next step, which is what we talked about earlier, deciding whether or not I want to go with a VoIP provider of some sort.
Right.
Deciding if I want to go with a soft phone or tie it into a nice new... See, my long-term goal would be to tie it into a nice 5.8 gigahertz phone system. But I still, like I said, would like it to be invisible for the most part.
Yeah.
You know, if I've got someone else visiting in the house and they don't... they're not going to know what's going on. They want to pick up the phone and make a call. I want to make it invisible for the most part.
Yeah, I think honestly, for your application, the IIXE is the way to go.
Yeah.
So, but I'd also like to go back and revise something that I said. I said you could get it running at 64 megs of RAM. You probably can. I mean, if it's just running Asterisk. But I'm checking. I just checked in my process list right now. The Bellsmine PBX right now is running, and it's taking, Asterisk itself is taking 54 megs of RAM. So you might want to go for a little bit more than 64 megs.
Well, and is that how many people using it right now, if any?
Actually, you know what? I didn't check to see how many people are on it.
Yeah, because the more people... I assume the more processes, the more things that are going on with it, it's going to be higher.
Yeah, it could be. There's four people on it right now. Actually, there's four or five people on it right now. So maybe that's just because I have a bunch of people in there. But I would, you know what, 64, the bare minimum, 96 or 128. I mean, RAM is so cheap.
Yeah, I was going to say, RAM is really, really cheap, and you can almost find it being given away at places these days.
But again, if you got a junky old machine, you have nothing to lose by trying it and having it not work.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
The world.
Absolutely. So.
And this machine right here, by the way, I'm using like just a little bit faster than the 2 gigahertz machine. I don't remember the exact specs of this box right here for the Bellsmine PBX, but it's handled 25 calls with minimal CPU load, so 25 yeah. Simultaneous calls, that is. So.
Right.
Bandwidth is really the limitation at that point, so I wouldn't really worry about it.
So someone at home running on cable modem DSL shouldn't have any problems?
No, a couple of calls, maybe two or three calls simultaneously.
256
more,
upload?
But you know what? If you want to maintain really good call quality, two or three calls is about the max for just the regular cable connection.
But still, that's enough to make a nice little conference call with your friends.
Yep.
Serves its purpose. And especially if there's some people in the privileged areas, not like me, unfortunately. I have 256 upload, but some places, I guess, have a lot more than that, huh?
Yeah, if you got 1 megabit upstream, like in New York, man, you can... very easily squeeze a bunch of calls on there.
Man, that would be
nice.
The Bellsmine
PBX right now has got 10 megabits. So like I said, we had 25 calls going at some point. It was like 2 megabits or something of bandwidth for hours, and it was no big deal, you know.
No sound quality, sound degradation?
No, I called it up, and I was, you know, I was going through radio archives, and I was joining different conferences, and it sounded fine. Like, nobody even knew how many people were on the PBX, so.
Cool.
Yeah, man.
All right, well, I guess that's going to wrap it up for that topic. We've got a full show now, but you know what? You want to knock out a couple other little things that have been on here for a while that I want to talk about?
Certainly, go for it.
Like, you sent me this, an email yesterday, I believe. This, to me, is just very clever and incredibly cool.
I know what you're talking about.
And, you know, like, all right, so, well... I think most of the listeners know what Gmail is by now, the Google email service that gives you 1 gigabyte of storage. Well, when that first came out, everybody, you know, creamed their pants going, oh my gosh, a gig of space, that's awesome, and everybody's, you know, the Where's Puppies are drooling that they're going to upload ISOs, and, you know, all these people are just coming up with all kinds of ideas and stuff they were going to do. Like we said, I think when we talked about the show, they're going to limit the file size of what you can upload. So it's not like it's going to be you can upload all your ISOs and upload all your whatever to the thing. Well, this gentleman, I don't know if, I don't know exactly how to approach this. Someone figured out, this is a Python script. This gentleman wrote a Python script that will allow you to actually use that 1 gigabyte. Because if you use it through the web interface, you can't upload big files. You know what? 1 gigabyte, whoop-de-doo, you'll never be able to fill it. Emails are small. Even if you've got a lot of attachments, it's going to take a long time to fill up a gigabyte of email. I send a lot of attachments, send and receive a lot of attachments. And in the course of the last 2 years, I don't think I've gotten a gigabyte of email stored up.
Yeah, me neither. Not even close.
So it's kind of overkill and silly. It was interesting at first, a gigabyte. Wow, you can do all this. You can do it. When reality set in, people are like, oh, well, yeah, I got a bunch of messages on there, but it's pretty much just like every other email provider. Well, this gentleman figured out a way to take advantage of all that space. If they're going to give it to you, well, damn it, take advantage of it and use it as best you can. And someone has written a Python script that will allow you to, it's called the Gmail file system, that will allow you to mount your Gmail account as a file system in Linux so that you can map to it, you can store files to it, etc., etc.
Oh, yeah. Very, very elite in my mind. I've seen the screenshots and just being able to copy files to your Gmail FS, man, unbelievable.
Yeah, taking a sip of iced tea there for that one. That is clever, and that's hacking.
Yeah.
That is hacking. That is true hacking right there, figuring out, you know what? It's there. It's just tempting you and teasing you. Look at me. I'm a gigabyte of storage, but you can't use me. Guess what? Someone can. Someone figured out how. Now, do you think this will last very long? Do you think Google will shut this down somehow?
You know something? I'm not really sure. I think they might just watch it for a little while and see if it gets abused. But if it really picks up, I'm sure that they'll shut it down.
Yeah, I suspect the same.
They didn't really anticipate everyone using their gigabyte up. They don't have the space for it, I'm sure, to handle, you know, a million users all having, like, gigabytes of junk on there. Or, you know, 10 million users or however many users they have. I don't really know, but you can't give a gig to everyone and have them fill it. So.
Yeah, so... You know, check this out. It's at richard.jones.name, N-A-M-E. The name, I think that's the first time I've ever seen the name extension. Definitely the first time I've ever used it on the show.
Yeah, definitely.
So he's got a first right there.
Weird.
But go there, and you'll see under Google Hacks, Gmail FS, and you can read all about it, download it, check it out, see the screenshot. The screenshot is really cool.
Oh, yeah.
Because the irony and it's a beautiful screenshot. If you understand what's going on, and I'm not going to explain it on the air, take a look at it and understand what's going on, because I didn't at first, actually. Take a look at what's going on in that screenshot, and it's pretty elite.
Yeah, I was blown away by it when I saw it. I was like, wait a second, he can't be doing that. Nope, he really is.
That's elite. That is lead, especially that he's going back to Gmail in the browser. That's awesome.
It's recursion at its best.
Exactly. It's that. God, you gotta love recursion jokes.
Yep.
Recursion jokes.
Well, I'd say they never get old. They almost never get old.
Oh man, you know what never gets old? Jug band music.
Oh my God. We'll see you next week.
Actually, I guess we probably should wrap it up.
Yeah. Jug bands for me.
No, you know what? I'm gonna. As long as I've got a few minutes, I've got a rant. Can I get this rant off my chest?
Wait. Does it have anything to do with jug bands?
No.
Okay, then you have not been vetoed.
Okay. All right. I'm sorry. There's two things. Before I go into a rant, I have one quick news item. This is last month, actually, July 19th. Lindo's officially changed their name to Linspire. Lindo's, which was the Linux distribution that was attempting to look and feel like Windows, trying to cross over and get those Windows users over. They called it Lindo's, and they've been in legal fight with Microsoft all this time over trademark of Windows versus Lindo's, etc. July 19th, they settled it. And when I say settle, I guess that means they pretty much lost because they changed the name to Linspire. So, if you're looking for anything Lindo's-related anymore, you're not going to find it. They've changed the site to linspire.com. You'll be redirected. Any new distros that they release now are coming under the name Linspire. You know what? Oh, I can't say this without using bad words, so I'm just going to do it. I'm sorry. You're going to have to bleep this part out when you play episode 60, but A piece of shit is still a piece of shit, no matter what you call it.
Hey, what are you talking about? I use Windows on all of my machines.
Yeah, right, sure you do.
Oh, come on. I'm all upset now that I have to upgrade to Linspire.
Yeah.
Love my Windows.
Rename everything. Linspire, because you're inspired by Linux, I guess. Is that what that's supposed to be a play on?
You know something? We need to stop talking about this, because I'm going to get so mad I'm going to punch through my monitor.
Charging for
stupid. Oh, my God.
Charging for a free... Never mind. Anyway, my closing rant. I've ranted about this company before. They crossed the line again with me, these bastards. Oh, you know what? You might as well just start bleeping now for about the next 3 or 4 minutes. Because I am going on the record once again to say Real Media sucks my ball sack. I hate Real Player. I hate Real Media. I don't know why I keep going back, and I know why, because you go to a website, you want something, hear something, you want to see something on the website, and they've only got one format, the freaking Real Media format. So that's why I end up having to do it if there's something I need. Oh, I went to a web page that had Real Video embedded into it.
Nice.
Okay, first of all, embedding anything into a page that's auto-starts, didn't anybody learn from GeoCities back in the day in Angelfire 1.0 that people hate it when you start playing your MIDI files when I hit the web page? I don't want to hear the fucking sugar bum fairy when I visit your site. Turn that shit off. Okay?
Oh my God.
I fucking hate that. Nobody wants shit to autoplay. That's also one of the big things against Flash. People don't like Flash that automatically starts when the site comes, because a lot of people on dial-up and it's too slow and everything. You know what? Stop embedding shit into your page. Stick with standard HTML, first of all. Second of all, media, particularly Real Media, sucks. It's complete garbage. The software is poorly written. The performance is horrible. It's always buffering something. The quality is crap. I went to a page that had Real Video embedded into it, and all of a sudden, here I am browsing along, and I was in Firefox, so I had like 6 or 7 other tabs open. I keep Firefox open for like weeks at a time. And I have multiple tabs of stuff that I'm in the middle of researching, articles I'm looking up. I had some notepads open. I had Edit Plus open where I was working on an article. I had a bunch of applications open. Of course, I had things running in the tray, yada, yada, yada. My system's running full bleed, right? All of a sudden, the page I'm going to with the embedded Real Player decides to contact Real Media servers and fucking update itself for no damn reason. I didn't tell it to do that. So it just starts updating itself. Okay, well, fine. You're going to update yourself, you cock. If that's the way you're written, fine. Update yourself. But do you know what it did next? Do you know what it did next?
I'm going to guess that it did something you didn't like.
It decided that, oh, well, since I've updated myself, I'm going to have to restart your computer. Your computer will restart in 10 seconds. What? No! No, my computer will not restart in 10 fucking seconds! Do you... If you turn my computer off, I'm yelling at my computer screen. I'm yelling at my computer machine. If you restart in 10 seconds, I am going to kick you in the nuts. And you know what it did? It restarted. I lost all of my tabs. I lost all of the things. I did not have them bookmarked because I'm using them right now. I don't bookmark everything. I lost it. I lost the stuff that I was in the middle of working on. Articles that I had made progress on. For the most part, I saved those frequently. I lost everything because Real fucking Media decided it was going to update itself without my fucking permission. So Real Media, you suck my cock. There. That's my rant of the fucking episode. That's my rant of the month. I've been saving that for so fucking long. I hate Real Media.
You know, Stank.
I'm sweating.
It's up on the show. And you could have just told me straight up, instead of making a fool out of me, that you wanted me to take the Dance of the Sugar Plum Fairies off of me.
You should put that on Bell's mind now as a joke.
Oh, my God.
How funny would that be?
My hit counter would definitely drop to zero.
How funny would that be, though?
No, that wouldn't be funny at all.
Oh, man. All right.
After you submit a number, I'll play a random MIDI file.
Sugar Plum. I don't know where that came from.
That's
certainly not in the show notes. That just popped out of the... I don't know. My brain works. My brain's broken. I don't know what to tell you. Oh, anyway, let's wrap the show up with that. What kind of time here? Did I go over? No, we're good.
Oh, yeah. You went over.
We're good. We're good. Whatever. All right. Let's see. Well, I probably shouldn't touch this topic all worked up now and pissed off, but I think I can, I'm going to make this very straightforward and kind of come out and make a little bit of an announcement, a commentary, whatever you want to call it. Do not, this does not necessarily, how do, wait a minute, how do they word that? The views and opinions
do not reflect the something.
The Rant Radio or any of the rest of DDP or Binary, whatever. This is what I think, and I'm going to say this because I damn well think it needs to be said. I heard Wind up at Hope, and since Hope, and even before Hope, about some so-called hackers, and I'm not going to dignify them by saying hackers, some so-called hackers, some of these hacktivists, as they like to call themselves, that were planning on disrupting the Republican National Convention. Now, it doesn't matter if it's a Republican National Convention, the Democratic National Convention, that's not the issue at all, so don't give me that crap. The fact is, attacking any kind of political website and planning it and doing it under the name of hackers, no, you do not represent me. And I just want to go on the record, again, speaking only for myself, and anybody else, you guys can agree, you can disagree, you can write me and say no, that you guys do support it, that's all fine. But I'm coming out on this show and saying that I hereby condemn any type of attacks on these websites, any denial of service. That's exactly what we do not need. That is not what hacking is about. That is not hacking. It absolutely isn't, and that is definitely not what we need as hackers right now, when we're actually making some headway. You're going to go out here, anybody involved in this is going to go out here under the name of hackers, which you're not. Let me repeat that again. You are not. If you do stuff like this, this is not hacking. You're going out there as script kiddies under the name of hackers, and you're going to go out, and you know what? We're going to get drugged through the mud again, whatever the proper grammar is, and treated back to the old evil hackers nomenclature that we've always had all this time, this whole idea of what hackers are, and you're going to go out and the media is going to jump all over it, and you're going to set us back 15 years with actions like this. So I, Stank Dog, personally come out and condemn any actions like this. And if you're listening to this and you are partaking in it, do not do it in my name. Do not do it in the name of hackers. Do not do it in the name of anything related to me personally. I hereby condemn it, and I hope other people know the difference between what these people are doing and what hacking is, and realize that they are in no way, shape, or form related.
Yeah, let me clarify for myself personally. I tend to agree with you, and not just in the sense of political websites, just websites in general. Don't claim that your little DDoS attack is hacking, because you want to know what it really is? It's censorship. If you fucking try to tell me you believe in free speech, you're going to DDoS somebody so they can't say what they want to say, you don't believe in free speech. You believe in censorship.
Oh, but they're exercising their free speech by performing the denial of service, right?
No. That's not free speech. That's like saying, you know, I have the right to, you know, run around the streets and scream anything I want because it's free speech. You're not exercising your right when you're infringing on somebody else's right. You know?
Yep. And you know what? If you're running around the street naked screaming, there's consequences for every action as well.
Yeah.
The consequences for that one might not be too pretty, but you know what? The consequences for doing what some of you people are going to do and may already be doing, I hope you get both barrels. I hope you get the full consequences of your actions. So, on that bright note, this is actually the 31st, Tuesday, August 31st. That means this Friday is the first Friday of September, so you have 2,600 meetings. So, or DEF CON meetings, or Binary Revolution meetings, or whatever you're going to call your meeting. Your hacker meetings are generally first Friday of the month, whatever they happen to be. So, make plans, try to make it. If you're going for the first time, try to go, check it out, see if there's a scene. I know there are some new meetings talked about in the forums. People are starting some more up, so good luck to them. And to the shout-outs. I'll let you start first, if you'd like.
Sure. My shout-outs. Actually, this one's kind of last minute because I was just browsing through the forums, and apparently Freakblade has posted that Young Brain was in an ATV accident and
no.
He was kind of in the hospital and fucked up. So if that truly is the case, then my shouts go to Young Brain. Hopefully everything works out. Hopefully he's all right. and that's about it.
Wow, that's yeah, that's terrible. I definitely second that. If I hope he's okay, I'll have to jump on the forums and check that out myself. I hope definitely hope he's okay. I hate to hear news like that. I guess we can give shout outs to the regular crew, to Lucky 225, Doug. Go check out Doug TV, DougTV.com. Is that right?
DougTV.org or something? I'm not really sure.
I think it's .com. I'm not positive, but DougTV.com or DougTV.org. I think it's DougTV.com. Obviously, I'm going to have to give personal shouts to the Bland Inquisitor and Dual Parallel. And they are taking care of business. Got to go and do their own things. Got to do the important things in life. Something that we always have and always will supported. So best of luck to them. They know we're always here for them, and we'll always be friends, but they're going to have to step away for a little while and take care of real life. And you know what? It's the best thing for everybody, and we're all happy about it, and we're all perfectly okay with it. So everything's cool. So like I said before, don't go worrying or starting anything about it. It's just real life taking its course. So that is going to do it. I guess, let's see. Closing music today, I'm going to go back to Tech N9ne. I really like this guy, Tech N9ne, and this is probably my favorite track off of the album. It's called I'm a Tell. So we're going to close with that, and if you have, you want to email us about anything, the address is radio@benrev.com. Article submissions, it looks like we're going to give you till the end of September, and then we're going to start laying the magazine out. So you have till the end of September to submit some stuff in. Also, besides that, it's really going to be first come. I mean, like, if we get enough to fill the magazine and we get something good in a month after or a week after and it's already full, you're going to be too late. So you don't want to wait till the end of September. You want to get it into us as soon as possible, because as soon as we get enough good articles, it's going to be closed and we're going to start holding for the next one. So you want to get them in as soon as possible. And also something I'm going to ask this time is, we'd like some feedback on the magazine and the content of the magazine itself. We get a lot of feedback on the show, and we get a lot of feedback in the forums somewhat, but I'd like to hear some feedback on the articles and the content of Binary Revolution magazine. Did you like, you know, the back spoofing article? Do you like having the Pearl Corner section? Do you like the Hacking 101? Do you hate the Hacking 101? Do you want to see more of this and less of that? I'd like to start getting some feedback on the actual magazine, and I know a lot of listeners of the show have bought the magazine, or at least I hope they have, so please send feedback on the magazine itself to letters@benrev.com, and we'd like to start printing some of those in the letter section of the magazine. So right now, the letter section is populated from a lot of different sources, different email addresses, and some from the forums, so please start sending us some email on the magazine itself. And, Not Theory, thank you for being on the show.
Not a problem.
Thank you for about 20 outtakes.
Oh, Jesus. This next clip show or whatever is going to be terrible.
It's going to be, yeah, it's going to be, you know, this almost turned into a clip show. We had so many rough starts.
We need the flashback show. Then we can be like a real show that jumped the shark.
Yeah, we can always have like, remember that, and we'll have like some music, that, like when your thing goes bloom, 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 and then it goes like back in time. Maybe not.
Oh, God.
Anyway. This is the part of the show where we tell everybody that we will see them next week, same jug band time.
Same jug band channel.
This is the town where the clowns put it down, baby. Close the door before your child hear the sound, baby.
Yo, yo, the killer clowns in your town raising all hell.
Taking needles with the stamina, coming to damage a buck in the barrel when I bust with a bang.
And it ain't no cause, that's a fraud, ain't no tall tale.
Women love it when I hit, when I cover the booty, they giving it to me, but it ain't no thang.
We reppin' KC Mo, fellas and the ladies know.
They be coming with the killers and with the gorillas, the villains that get you when you disrespect us.
Even the babies know, Tech N9ne got crazy flow.
We be giving the women the willy, we sick of the haters when the fans gonna get this record.
This
This is important, we recording every place we go.
Get you up in the room and tripping up in the room. I give it to you anywhere you wanna have it.
Baby, this is a horse, and yes, of course, I'ma have to break the hoe.
Leaving the kids at home, I'm gonna bone alone. We hopping up and down like jackrabbits.
So many kids put this on their daddy's mind.
Never will I ever put them out there like that. Feeling that I did, checking in to take it right back.
Telling them that they mommy's boyfriend's tech guy.
And we're looking at me like you really wanna fight, cat. All checking in to win, I know it's when I'm my cat.
This is the town where the clowns put it down, baby. Close the door before your child hear the sound, baby.
Mama say you stop or I'm gonna tell a papa.
This is the town where the clowns put it down, baby.
Mama say you stop or I'm gonna tell a papa.
Close the door before your child hear the sound, baby.
Mama say you stop or I'm gonna tell a papa.
Yo, 151 Malibu rum and pineapple juice.
For those that don't know, that's caribou loom, origin in Mizzou.
We having fun, got some buns on some yak abuse.
Road dogs that are repping the smoke a lot, regime, outlaw goose clicking a zoo.
Stagger, when you with the nut house, we gon' have ya.
Taking everything up in the book, from X to that poof, you looking to get took.
Abracadabra, 151 and coke is Viagra.
Give it to me, give it to me, give it to me, got her in love from having the best shook.
I'm hella fed up with all the silly rumors, dawg.
Second that we got dropped from J. Cole, that never ever would happen, I mean, what do they know?
We kept our head up, now money's coming to us all.
We're kicking it with strange while I'm winning fame, giving the game only when I say so.
So crack some bub with me, demons get some love with me.
Do what you gotta do to get, what you gotta get, I gotta get it all, checking in on the road.
Get on some shrub with me, two cases of bud with me.
What you gonna do to get the women on crunk, I'ma hit them with the funk, got them all like shrub.
Oh. This is the town where the clowns put it down, baby. Close the door before your child hear the sound, baby. This is the town where the clowns put it down, baby. G's in your chakra, and ain't nobody hot car. Close the door before your child hear the sound, baby.
Mama say you stop or I'm gonna
yo, one, and then comes the two to the three, and
that was the anthem, now this the anthem. Hella rockin' the planet again, you can't stand it again.
Huns, they've been coming through to see me, man.
Then I depend some and I bust it random. In a bit, I'ma land them, die, grim it, I rim it again.
Raise, I love to get high and get paid.
Why you wanna stick them with another hit up out of a biz, baby? You don't wanna miss the hit.
Babes, they love to come by and get laid.
Why I am in the pinnacle when I rip it, I'ma kill them in this. To the haters, I gotta send them a gift.
Bump this in your ride or in the club.
Giving everybody what they need, I give it all, so they give it all back to me.
Haters, don't you hide, just show some love.
Dig it, dig it, I'ma rep to be, and never ever let the sea get the best of me.
So many kids put this on their daddy's mind.
Never wanna put them out there like that, feeling that I did, checking in and take it right back.
Telling him their mommy's boyfriend is tag nine.
Oh no, girl, your baby's at the door. This is the town where the clowns put it down, baby. Close the door before your child hear the sound, baby. This is the town where the clowns put it down, baby. G's in your chakra, and ain't nobody hot car. Close the door before your child hear the sound, baby.
Mama say you stop or I'm gonna
your chakra, ain't nobody hot
talk. And this is another Jack T. production.
Mama say you stop or I'm gonna tell a papa.
This is the town where the clowns put it down, baby.
Mama say you stop or I'm gonna tell a papa.
Close the door before your child hear the sound, baby.